Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. As we lead into this, I want to remind you all that are just tuning in now that this is the time of year for our annual WEAA Members Only Appreciation Holiday Party. That's Thursday night. This Thursday, December the 9th, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Creme Restaurant and Lounge in Baltimore. If you don't know what that is, that's the old Ixia. Before that, it was Louis' Bookstore right there on Charles Street. Enjoy complimentary food and special live broadcast performance featuring the smooth sounds of saxophonist Eric Marner. I'll be co-hosting some of the live coverage with my colleague Angela Duchess Thorpe. And you must be a current WEA member to attend. Space is limited, so please reserve your place and call 443-885-2075. That's 443-885-2075. And this special event is brought to you by Creme Restaurant and Lounge and Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. So join me there tomorrow night. It'll be great. After the show, after our program, we'll be heading down to meet all of y'all. And you can meet us, and my producers will be there as well. You can meet them. So please join us. Right now, we are about to launch into one of our Urbanite radio stories. Every month, the Urbanite comes out with incredibly interesting stories about our community, about people in our community. And one of those stories this month was written by Rich Romero, who is an award-winning, known journalist here in this community for a long, long time, and retired, but he couldn't keep him retirement, so he writes stories for the places like the Urbanite these days. And he wrote this piece on Mary Joel Davis, who is the founder and former director of Alternative Directions and the founder of Second Chance. And I will say that Mary Joel is really one of the heroes of this community who fights for the rights of people who are incarcerated, the rights of women who have been incarcerated. And she retired from Alternative Directions last year. I remember that last year there was a party when retire.
Good party.
And she then founded, she couldn't stop, and she's founded Second Chance, which is working with women in our state prisons who are incarcerated with life prison terms. And many people think these women should not be, and we're going to talk about that in more this hour. And Mary Joel, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
I appreciate you being here, even though you're a little bit under the weather, to be with us tonight. That means a lot. Thank you for
you're welcome.
Coming over here.
Just getting over bad colds and pneumonia.
And pneumonia. Slight details, pneumonia.
Yeah.
So, Mary Joel, I think that to set the framework a little bit. I mean, we met some years back when you were with Alternative Directions, and your work and your life's work has kind of been dedicated to prisoners' rights, to helping the incarcerated find a new existence. I mean, this is like this is who you are.
Yes, well, part of me, anyhow.
Part of you, anyhow.
Yeah.
But a big part of you. I mean,
yes.
Talk a bit for our listeners who don't know about Alternative Directions. Let's start there. Talk a bit about that work that you started.
It began back in the late 79, somewhere 1979, and I used to volunteer down at the Baltimore City Jail, and of all things, doing stress management for prisoners, which was pretty funny, but it was amazing, really, because the women actually in the big cells where they all were at that time were able to actually close their eyes and try to meditate. And then, you know, I saw what happened to the women when they would get out, and they would almost immediately go back into the jails. You'd see the repeat. And the repeat was because when they got out, they had no place to go. They were on drugs. You know, they were prostituting, stealing, doing whatever. And they it was like it was their way of life. It was their way of earning a living, which is insane in our country to think that's how people live. But so then I sort of graduated to the prison.
That wasn't me. That was me. We're having a cell phone symphony tonight here between our two phones.
I thought I turned it off.
That's all right.
In fact, it's still on. But anyhow, we started Alternative Directions because we needed to find...
Don't worry about it.
Okay. We'll do it again.
We'll have one of the producers come in and just grab your phone for a while. I'll take it out and bring
that
it back to
you. That would be
later.
Good. We started doing workshops down at the prison, and were able to really see the civil legal problems that women were having, domestic, mm-hmm. like where a person couldn't get a divorce and needed to get away from the husband or whoever it was that was abusing him. And a lot of times what happened would be we were funded by the Maryland Legal Services, mm-hmm. and we're not attorneys, but we could go into the prisons, and we go into the men's and women's prison and be able to really help them file, like, for not domestic violence, but to be able to get a divorce so that when they got out, they wouldn't have to go back to that person, especially the women. A man would think if he's still married to that woman that she's his. So what we found was, no, that didn't work. So it worked when he knew she was no longer his. And then you had things like that's come up lately, credit, where a person is in prison and they don't realize it, but somebody's using their credit, and and they come out and they find out that their credit card was stolen, and or even by a friend or a relative, and they have these high bills in there. They can no longer get credit. They can't get an apartment. They can't get anything. So we had to go through a lot of civil way of going through the prison, being able to get things signed, being able to do that. And then the main thing was the child support. And people believe, and it's gotten a lot better than it was, but people believe that the men and women had to pay child support while they were in prison. Mm-hmm. Now, they make, if they can work there, they make $90 a day. So there they are working $90 a day. That's, what, $180 maybe for the month, and they're expected to...
You mean $9 a day?
$9.
$9 a day. You said 90.
90 cents a day.
90 cents a day.
90 cents.
When I worked in prison, if you should joke, it was 50 cents. 50
okay.
cents a day.
Okay.
90 cents a day.
90 cents a day. Then yeah, dear God, no.
I was going to say, I'll go to jail to get a job.
There you go. But the... Do I have to keep these on?
No, you can take them off to a caller's connection.
Okay. So what happens is the man gets out, and he's got $35,000 worth of debt because he hasn't been able to pay his child support. So we went to court. My husband's law firm took it to court, and my daughter-in-law won the case. And... now the men and women can file to stop their child support while they're in prison. And by that, it helps because when they get out, they have to start paying. But what really happens is they can start being back with their family if they choose. But they have to, before they couldn't go back with the woman because they had all this child support and people... you know, would come after him, and they were taking their licenses away. It was craziness. So the civil legal part of what we did pro se was really very important. And then it got to be seeing how the women getting out are not able to function when they get out because they have, unless they have a support of a family. And what we did is we worked with the parole commission, and what the Open Society funded us for this.
And Open Society Institute of Baltimore.
Yeah, right. Institute of Baltimore. And what they did was they gave us some money and to start the transition program. And we go through, the parole commission will say, okay, we are going to parole this person. We will parole it to you. Or, well, you know, you will be in charge of that person for a year to 2 years. And then we have to be able to take that person, make sure that that person has drug treatment. They go to Turk House for 28 days. They come out.
Which is a drug rehabilitation facility.
Yeah. Right. And then they come out, and they then proceed to go to a halfway house for at least 8 months. And then they, in that time, they come to our office for 3 times a week for counseling. And we hook them up with the parenting, especially the health, mental health, any kind of thing that they can do to get their life in stable. And within 3 months or so, maybe four, then that's when they'll be looking for a job. But not until then, because people think they should come out and go to work. Well, they can't. You know, they get out with $50. They have
$50.
$50. And they...
No ID.
No,
but that's changed now, though. That has changed.
Yeah, oh, believe me, I fought like that for like, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I was screaming and hollering at people. You know, the ID and is so necessary. And the Social Security number to be able to get a job when they got out. But so they get out with this $50, and if they don't have a ride home, you know, they have to take a cab. Well, that's going to cost $33, and if they have a place to get home. But they get out, they are needing to find a place to live, or even if they get out, they'll have like a person that might keep them for a day or two. Sleep on the couch, you know. They have to have bus fare. The bus fare, do you know how much it costs to take a bus a day?
Like $5?
It's $360.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's what, $56 a month? Just, or maybe it's 65. It's gone up, I know. Just to take a bus in order to try to go get a job. And of course, in today's world now, I don't know how people are doing it. I don't know how people are doing it. So we really, people say we hold their hands. Well, we do, you know. And our success rate is 85 to 95, depending on what year you're talking about.
Your recidivism rate, you mean?
Yeah.
The women that come to your program and go through alternative directions.
Yes.
That only 10 to 15% of them go back to prison.
Yeah. And they're usually for a drug charge. You know, it's women basically do not commit serious crimes. I mean, or at least I don't think they do. I mean, other people might, but, you know, they...
Well, I want folks to get ready for this next conversation, this next part of our conversation, and join us here at 410-319-8888 when you can. We're talking with Mary Joel Davis, who founded and was director of Alternative Directions, we were just talking about. But this new project she's working on when she left is called Second Chance, working with women in prison who have life sentences and working to have them released from prison. And that's what we're about to launch and talking about. And that was the heart of the article by Richard Amara about Mary Joel Davis in this month's Urbanite magazine. Join us at 410-319-8888. This is a very controversial subject because there's many people in this state, in this country, who believe that life without parole should mean life without parole, and that's it. And that happened. We'll talk about the history of that during this conversation that kind of erupted under Ronald Reagan and erupted under other leaders here in the state of Maryland, including the Democrats like Paris Glendening. Who said life should mean life. We'll talk about that and whether people should be allowed out and what this work is that Mary Joel's doing. Maybe some of you have friends, relatives who are incarcerated for life for, let's say, defending a child against an abusive father. So join us here, these thoughts. 410-319-8888. We'll come to your calls in just a minute as we talk with Mary Joel Davis. Because when this article begins, it opens with the article is called "The Unreleased," with this woman Etta Myers.
Yes.
Who is in, I guess, Jessup and Mellon House Correction in Jessup?
Yes, she's
Women's
she's,
Cut.
Yes.
To tell us her story and why you got involved with her.
Well, mainly because when I was doing the work with Alternative Directions, I had no chance to be able to really talk to the women who had long-term sentences or no release dates. And so when I retired, actually before I retired, I started doing this and seeing how ridiculous it is and listening to their stories. Excuse me. And with Etta was young. I think she was in her 20s. And she went to a...
And what is she now? Where is she now?
In
60s, 50s?
Yeah. She's been there 33
years, the article 33 says.
33 years, yeah. And her story was that she was at a friend's house, and she was with her boyfriend, and she went across the street to, or her boyfriend asked her to go across the street to talk to this other guy who lived there, and there was another man with that met them, and they said, you know, knock on his door, and the guy said, no, he won't open for me. So Etta knocked on the door, and the guy leaned out the window and said, hey, and she then left, and she went home, and after that, the two guys killed this guy, and so the police came and said that for a little while, they didn't blame her right away, but they blamed her, and conspiracy, I guess, what have you. And so she's in jail since then, and I call it the knock on the door. You know, don't knock on somebody's door. But how ridiculous it is. I think in the article it said it's costing us $1 million to keep Etta. I mean, is that insane? I mean, if she had shot him, or if there had been any proof that she had been there, but there was none, you know. And I'm not a lawyer, and I don't understand and how that our society can put up with that. It just doesn't make sense.
It's always interesting to me on the political side of this that it's that many Democrats, liberal Democrats who get elected to office, are afraid to act on these things when mm-hmm. it comes to people who are incarcerated unjustly or people who are in prison. They won't parole people. They won't look at sentences, commute sentences. It takes a Republicans who you identify with law and order to go in and have the gumption to go, okay, I will let this person out. Like Democrats are afraid to be seen as soft or something.
Yes. Yeah.
By looking at these people's cases and really making decisions based on their lives and on what allegedly happened or did not happen.
Yeah, it is crazy because you've got Glenn Denning with, you know, life means life. But Schaefer, I think it all started with Schaefer. When Schaefer pulled back, 100 and some people on work release, because one man on work release went and shot his girlfriend and shot himself and killed himself. So Schaefer pulled everybody back. Now, these women were on work release, they actually were in a halfway house living and saving money and could go home for the weekends and living and not committing any crime. And one of the things that all these women say is, hey, when you release a woman, She doesn't go back to any violent crime. There never has been a woman that was released on parole or, you know, given a pardon or court came in and, you know, reduced the sentence. There are none. But, you know, so, you know, you look at the men and, yeah, I'm afraid they do. But
it seems to me I remember years ago when this started in the early 90s, if I think it was the early 90s, Rachel Wohl, who's a lawyer
And
was a filmmaker at that point too, worked to have women released from prison who were there because they were battered women and defended themselves against their husbands who were doing violence against them or who were hurting their children or sexually abusing their children, and the women stepped in the way and stopped the husband and killed the husband in the process. And she got a number of women, was in part of the process helping a number of women get released from prison because of this.
Yes.
And what you're finding is a lot of women in doing these long sentences, these life without parole sentences or life sentences, are those women now, today, even now.
Yes, they're a lot of the law has changed enough that judges understand domestic violence, so you don't have quite as much problems as you or that I used to see, and that was a big thing when Schaefer let him go, the 12 women, and by the way, every one of them are doing very well, and that's been what 20, 30 years
yes,
now,
right?
You know, so none of them have ever committed another crime. Well, that's not true. There was not of that 12, but there was a woman that came back to prison that had been released, but it was a technical thing. It was not any violent crime. So you're looking at that and you're saying, and the women are constantly trying to say, why are they not treating us the way we act? Yeah, we did a crime. I'm not saying everybody's simply innocent. And they don't, you know, there are some that are innocent. We have a young woman who was 16 when she went in, and it's 17 years later now.
What was she alleged to have done?
She killed a person. There was a young boy, I think, same age as her. She went on his block or whatever, and he said, you're on my block, and whatever the conversation, I don't know exactly what it was, but the 16-year-olds both went home, got guns, and came back to shoot it out, and she killed him, and he missed her, but she did a plea bargain, so she at least, you know, was able to, she'll be getting out, hopefully, with the parole in a little while. But you look at the statistics now, not the statistics, but the how the doctors are looking at the brain and how they're saying 16 years old cannot possibly understand what they're doing some of these times. And, you know, when I was talking to her last night about it, and I said, how do you feel? And she says, I can't imagine that I did that. She said, I don't even know why something like that would happen. And it wasn't that, you know, I'm not saying it wasn't her fault, because she says it was definitely my fault. But that wouldn't happen if she had, her brain was better equipped to handle the puberty or whatever you're going through, the ups and the downs and the hormones and whatever that's causing some of it.
This is part of the thing that you're putting together, these stories of women. Is it a book you're working on, these stories?
Oh, God, no. I'm terrible at writing books. But everybody tells me that's what I should do.
You have to get you on the mic if you're going to talk, Richard. We'll get you on the mic.
But you take, there's a another woman who is, and I really, as I say, I'm picking cases right now, I guess, that I just don't understand. There's a woman who, a college graduate, and her husband was beating her up, but it wasn't a case of domestic violence, what happened to her. Her brother had killed her husband,
mm-hmm.
and he killed her. He killed him because they had a fight, and she did not know anything about him killing the brother. Wait a minute, I got it wrong. She didn't know he killed the husband. The husband actually is not dead. He was only in the hospital, and I'm sorry, he's not dead. And she, the husband, when he was in the hospital, told his mother, I think that she had something to do with it. So of course they went and arrested her. She didn't know that much. She didn't know anything about it. They wouldn't let her see the husband. So she's sitting in jail, and the next thing happens is she sees the attorney once in the bullpen and once over in Towson. And he assures her she's going to get 18 months, no more than that, because she hadn't done anything. She's been there 19, 20 years now, and she's the nicest, calmest person you'd ever meet.
And there's another story that you had in here about a woman who was protecting her son from...
Oh, Joyce. Joyce, yeah. Now, that is such a... that is so horrible. Joyce was in Salisbury.
Let's take a short break and come right back here. 410-319-8888. This is one of our Urbanite Radio stories. We're talking with Mary Joel Davis. The story is about women in our state prisons who are serving life for the crimes we're talking about. The question we want to know from you all at 410-319-8888 is, should these women be paroled? Should we have a different kind of justice where women who are protecting their children, protecting their lives, may have committed a murder, been around a murder, do life? Is that the kind of world we want? And we're also the country that imprisons more people than any other nation on the planet Earth. 410-319-8888. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. Before we return to our conversation, I wanted the news that just came over the wire that I want to share with all of you. Sad news. That Elizabeth Edwards, who the former wife of Senator John Edwards, who had cancer, just passed away. And she lost her battle with cancer. And so I want to let you all know that and send our condolences out, obviously, to everybody who knew her and all of us who thought she was a woman who stood up and put up with a lot. And we're sorry that she passed away at such a young age of 61. Elizabeth Edwards died just this afternoon of cancer at age 61. So, and we are talking here with Mary Joel Davis, who is the founder of and former director of Alternative Directions, founder of Second Chance, a program where she's now working in the prisons with women serving life sentences that many people think should be paroled. Should these women be serving 30 years, 35 years in life for the rest of their lives, spending millions of dollars for their incarceration? Is there a better way? What are your thoughts? 410-319-8888. Women who are protecting their children. We're about to talk about one of those women now. Women who were being used by the men that they were with. Literally, someone told them, knock on the door, because I can't do it. And then they knew the guy was home and went later and shot and killed him. She's been in jail for 33 years. The only crime she committed, and she's there. And maybe this wasn't even a crime she committed. There are other folks that we talked about earlier. Women who were released from prison, 12 of them in the early 90s, because of the work of many women who fought for this. One of my friend Rachel Wohl, who had William Donald Schaefer, had the guts and the gumption to say, yes, these women should be paroled because they were in jail for defending themselves against husbands who were abusing them or protecting their children. And he freed them all over 17 years ago, and they've remained free and living productive lives. So is there a better way in this nation where we incarcerate more people than any other country on the globe, more than China, more than any nation we think of as a dictatorship, more people in jail? Something is amiss. 410-319-8888. On our way back to the story about this woman who defended her child, who was being sexually abused by her boyfriend.
Yes.
And is in jail now. We'll get her story in a minute. But first, let's go to the phones, get some callers in here, and and then we'll come back to the story. At 410-319-8888. And I'll let you get your headphones on so you can hear our callers as they call in. And Chris, in Severna Park, you are on the air.
Hi, Mark. I just wanted to say thank you very much for your guest's work. She's doing really phenomenal things. And you posed the question. We know each other through Doug Colbert and the work we did at the Bail Project.
Oh, yes, right, Chris.
I'm a defense lawyer of 20 years now. And you posed the question, what kind of society do we want to live in? I want to quote a friend of mine, a Professor Brenda Blum. Who's
I know Brenda very well.
There's no throwaway people. This nonsense of warehousing people and putting them in facilities that make them come out far worse than they were when they came in. In the trade, we call it gladiator school. It's just got to stop. We're just shooting ourselves in the foot, and I really applaud the work that your guest does, and I think that we should not define people by the worst thing that they did, and that there is a way to be able to reach people, and it's just money going down the drain. So thanks for the important show you're doing and the work you do, Mark. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Chris.
All right. Bye-bye.
It is money going down the drain. I think that that this way we incarcerate everybody, and, of course, in this country we're incarcerating poor people, working people, mm-hmm. and mostly people of color, and the majority in terms of percentages. And something's amiss. And so we're talking today about the women who are incarcerated in prison. One of our urbanized stories of Mary Joel Davis is working to free these women from our state prisons here in Maryland. You're about to tell us a story about a woman who's in prison because she intervened to save her boy from being sexually abused by her boyfriend.
Yeah, she walked into the house. She had been out. And she walked into the house, and she opened the door of the bedroom, and her boyfriend was sodomizing the 2-year-old child. And she just, you know, well, you can imagine what she screamed and hollered and what have you. And I think what happened was he said to her, I can do whatever I want. You have nothing to do with me. I can do. And it just set her off, and she went and got a gun and she shot him, and they convicted her. And I will say, you know, Mike Milliman and
lawyer at University of Maryland. Yeah,
sure. And their clinic has been really trying to help her get out on that, you know, project that they do. There are so many cases that, like, there's so many cases that the University of Maryland has, and also Michelle Nethercott at the University of Baltimore. And it's so difficult because they have all these cases. And, you know, we need more people to help. Maybe lawyers to come in and help them. I don't know whether they'd want that or not, but somebody needs to, you know, like they say, man up Well, somebody needs to man up for the women that, you know, they've caused all this trouble for. But with Joyce's case, she's tried everything, even...
How long has she been in prison now?
Oh, she's been there probably 30-some-odd years. And the son that was, you know, abused ended up in prison also.
Because he, of course, had to
go
part of the
foster home. Yeah, nobody take care of him.
Right.
You know? And it's called craziness.
It's you know, I remember working in prison in the mid-70s. I worked for a couple of years in the Maryland State Prison System, running a program for men who were incarcerated. It was in Hagerstown, men who were incarcerated who were under 21 in an adult prison. Mm. And I ran a theater program there as well. And then they had what Richard talks about in this article. They had programs that were work release. They had programs that allowed prisoners who had done well, who had been working for their release, to go to college in prison. And if they did well and were in minimum security, they could go to Hagerstown Junior College on campus, on the prison bus, and brought home at night. Almost all of those men that I knew that went through my theater program, that were part of this college program, none have gone back.
Of course not.
They are making, one of them is Charles Dutton, the famous actor.
Yeah.
And there are many others. Joe Boone, who I write to all the time, was down in Virginia working with kids who are mentally disabled. I mean, there are men doing great work in the community, and they're out there. So, this is something we need to have a conversation about: is what kind of society we want.
Yeah.
And can we incarcerate a way out and keep these people in prison, many of whom who could become productive citizens of our society.
Well, the other thing with the 12 women that got out, because I really worked on that, and I had worked with Mike Milliman before with the parole commission too, so that that was like a couple years before that. But the thing that has happened is they've taken away all the money for college.
Right, the Pell Grants.
The Pell Grants. And that in itself is the most insane thing in the world, because only education is going to help you get a job. I mean, they say the college rate of college grads, or the unemployment rate of college people is 5%. It's the others that don't have it. So there's a group of us that started a college program at MCIW, and it's the second women's college program now, where we have instructors that from Notre Dame, from Loyola, from Goucher, Hopkins, Stevenson, and they all come in and they are getting these women an AA degree from Anne Arundel Community College. But it's, you know, it's a tough thing. We have to fundraise
to keep that going. You have to fundraise to keep it alive.
To pay for the tuition at Anne Arundel Community College. But you know that when the people are getting out, there's that chance. That's their, you know, one chance. And like Joyce, she was part of that people that were taken back. She has just two more or four or six credits towards a degree here in
Morgan State University.
Morgan State University. And you know, they pulled her back. She had a car. She was living fine. You know, she had to...
I mean, when they cut these programs out, they cut the work release out, she was forced to go back to prison.
Yeah.
Even though she was on her way out to the community.
Yeah. Even though she'd been there for, like... They'd been there 7 and 8 years, out working, doing, you know, what they needed to do.
Well, interesting. Maybe we can ask Governor O'Malley this question when we meet him next about what we'll do about this. Let me go back to the phones here and let you comment on that. But let's go back to the phones. Let me throw those headphones on.
Okay.
Again, Mary Joel, 410-319-8888. Mary Joel Davis, one of our Urbanite Stories, founder of Second Chance, working with women in our prisons to get them paroled and out of jail, who've been in jail for 20, 30 years and more. for many of them, for crimes of defending themselves and their children. And Cindy in Timonium, you're on the air.
Hi, great timing, Mark, because I was going to ask about Governor O'Malley. My understanding from another show is that he is terrible about parole, that he lets the requests pile up to the ceiling in his office, and that the head of his parole board is a very, very good person who actually was an Ehrlich appointee. And although
David Blumberg,
don't like to admit it, Ehrlich had a rather good nationwide reputation for going along with what his parole board suggested and getting the good people out. Does she know anything about this?
Mary Jo?
I don't know. I voted for O'Malley. He's a friend and his wife's a friend. So it was hard because I knew, he at least went with the death sentence against the death sentence. So that's a help, but it's hard to try and let people understand it's sometimes you're dead in prison. I mean, if I had to go to prison, I would rather die. It is not a good place to be.
I think in the spirit of Cindy's question, I mean, I think it is the time for kind of Democrats to stand up and not be afraid to do the right thing.
Yeah.
I think that again, Republicans, because they're kind of they are synonymous in many people's minds, whether it's true or not, with being tough on crime, have less compunction about parole and letting people out and feel that they don't have anything to prove.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think Democrats think they have something to prove and are afraid to do what's right.
And it bothers me. I don't understand why legislatures. When I think it will all come down is when they realize, hey, this is costing too much money.
That's right.
And then all of a sudden somebody will say, oh, all those old people in there, they're not going to do anything. Let's let them out. And, the medical bills, you get older, the medical bills are going to go higher and higher. And I don't want to wait for that. I want to see people being able to live.
So I'm curious, Mary Jo, you dedicated your life to this work.
Don't know that I dedicated my life. But
of course you've dedicated your life to this work.
I don't know.
Being so modest.
I'm not modest. I've got five kids. Now, if you say dedicated my life to them,
Now, that's work, too.
Yeah. Of course, they might say, you care about them more than us. But no.
But you could have done anything you wanted, but you chose to work in this.
Oh, that's true. That is true. My mother was famous when she said, dear, what are you doing? And I tried to explain it, and she said, no, dear, that's not something we do. We do not go into prisons and jails. I didn't even know what a prison or jail, back then. But the famous story is my husband. We're riding down Greenmount Avenue, and Ed's the lawyer. And he's riding down. We went by the prison, and I said, oh, I'm going to go there today. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, I'm going to volunteer. And he went, over my dead body. So he loved what I did in the end. He really did.
I think that in many ways that we are judged by how we take care of the least among us in the society.
Yes. Yeah.
And go ahead.
Well, there's women that, and I say, I just pick on some of the women. I mean, there's so many stories. But
yeah, tell us some more.
Like, the one story that bothers me a lot is a woman in another county, and she was in a bar, And there was a guy there who was drunk and another guy who followed them out. And they were going in his car, the guy's car. Now, whatever she was doing, I don't know, but she was trying to take care of him or take him home. I have no idea. But the guy, the other guy, went behind the car, their car, or whosever car it was. Mm-hmm. Can't remember right mm-hmm. offhand. Mm-hmm. But went, and what happened was he shot the guy. And she didn't see him shoot him. But because she jumped out of the car, but she heard the shot. And she's still in jail. She's in jail forever because the guy, the state's attorney, you know, had to get somebody, and they're getting her conspiracy. The guy was only 17 at the time. He actually shot them, the guy. He's out. She's in. And I keep saying, why? Why is that happening?
Are all these people you're talking about, are there potential parole on the governor's desk?
No. There's only two there. No, I know of three.
Why only two or three?
Well, because the way the parole commission works is they have to agree to the case. They have to say, okay, we agree that this person would be good to get out. And then there would be two commissioners. Those two commissioners go back to the whole board of commissioners or whatever they call it, and they all have to agree that, yes, this person would not hurt society anymore. And they then turn around and they can send it down to the governor if that's the case. If the governor's worried about releasing people, you can imagine the parole commission, because, you know, like poor parole commissioner, scared to death. I'm saying this, but they are. They're scared to death. Somebody's going to do something bad and everybody's going to pounce on him. But the problem I have is the women never do it. The women never commit the other crime. You know, so stop it. Why can't they see that? There's a list so long of women being released over the years that, you know, none of them have done anything. In the last seven, there have been seven that have been released over a period of years now, and that they haven't committed the crime. You know, you don't know how to stop them from, you don't know how to help them to get released. Like, what I'm trying to do is work with a bunch of lawyers and trying to get them, their cases brought up, you know, for, say, if the judge could look at the case and reduce, if the judge can reduce a person's case, then what could happen is they could get out, you know, maybe if they have life sentence or, you know. But even some of these women have life sentences with parole, and they still, you know, haven't been able to get there. But one of the cases that is, you know, to me was horrible was Tanya. And Tanya was accused of setting fire to her
home and killing the babies. We only have like 2 minutes left, so I'm
okay.
sorry.
Okay. And Tanya's case was, I can remember her crying in the jail. And I can remember nobody thinking she was guilty. And the fire was started. And when she jumped out of the window, she thought her husband had the rest of the kids. And she tried to get back in the house. She went around the back of the house. And there's this guy who had been harassing her husband, had a fight with him. He had liquid fluid on his body. The fire department actually, you know, looked at what had. And somehow or other, he's never charged. And this woman is so innocent. And you can imagine her head.
They accused her of starting the fire to shield a baby she had been starving to death.
Yeah, and she's thin as a rail, and her kids were all like that. Her whole family looks like that. And, I mean, they're very tall and thin and what have you. And, you know, you look at them, unlike me.
Or me. But, you know, Marjorie, I think that we're just about out of time, and I want to encourage listeners to go to the Mark Steiner Show website, thestinershow.org, and click on the Urbanite story so you can read this Urbanite radio story about Mary Joel Davis and her work in these women. And what I would say to you, Mary Joel, if you would do it, and you may not want to do this, maybe Richard Merrill will help you do it, is to put some of these stories on paper, and we'll put them on the website with the women's pictures and with the women to let the world know who these women are. We need to do that, I think.
I'm sure the women would like it because they are really trying to help themselves now.
There are enough people walking free who lie to us and the U.S. government and destroy the economy and start wars. These women maybe should be walking free too. So, Mary Joel Davis, thank you for your work.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's always good to see you.
Thank you very much for being here.
Richard Meyer, thank you for doing the story for Urbanite. And Urbanite, thank you for bringing the story to our attention so we can do another Urbanite radio story here on The Mark Steiner Show. And we are going to take a very brief break and come back. And when we do, we are going to be joined by Steve Isberg and Roger Hickey to have a debate and discussion. You know, this is debt commission going on now, and some people are saying that for America to survive, we have to slash government expenditures. And other people are arguing, no, what we have to do is spend more money to stimulate the economy, and that's how we rebuild America. How do we do it? We're going to have the debate here, and we want you to join us at 410-319-8888. Stay with us. We'll be right back.